podcast for geeks by geeks, where our hosts talk news headlines, comics, tech, and have in-depth discussions on all things geek. Keep calm and venture into the wasteland.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome back to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. Before we get into tonight's episode, I just wanted to give you guys a heads up that we did run into some technical difficulties while recording this episode. When we record episodes for the podcast, we use Skype, and unfortunately, once in a while, Skype acts up. And on this occasion, for this episode, it did act up several times, and I've done my best to edit it as best I can, so I apologize if some conversations get cut off, if it might seem a little jarring at times. That is probably when Skype was acting up. So I apologize for that. I did the best I could. So I'm hoping you will enjoy this episode. This is a reunion of sorts between myself and my guests this evening of the old Geek Fallout podcast. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Thank you very much for listening.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome back to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. And joining me this evening, I have two individuals, formerly of the Geek Fallout podcast, my co-hosts in crime from a few years ago. First up is Mr. Richard Reeder. How's it going, Rich?
Good. Just glad to be back podcasting with the OG crew.
Excellent. And last but not least is Mr. Jeff Brown. How's it going, Jeff?
Quite well. Thanks for having me back. It's again, I'm not sure which one I come up first, but
all right. You kind of trailed off there. I should say, dear listener, we are having some issues with Skype this evening. So hopefully we'll get through this with minimal technical difficulties. Fingers crossed. As I mentioned, this is a reunion of the original Geek Fallout podcast. The three of us started Geek Fallout, I want to say 2012 is when we started.
Yeah.
We Geek Fallout carried on till about a year ago or so. And, it's been at least 5 years, aside from the previous episode, which was our Warhammer tutorial with Jeff. Aside from that, I mean, this is the first time we've podcasted in 5 or 6 years, so this is awesome. So for this episode, we're going to be just doing some picks and pans and some general discussion about some things that's happened. And since, you know, we've podcasted last,
this is going to be a very long episode then.
Well, it potentially could be. Hopefully not too long.
6 years of stuff, Clark.
Well, the one thing I really wanted to get Jeff's opinion on, and you too, Rich, so, you know, feel free to chime in, is we, back in the Geek Fallout days, whenever there was a season of Game of Thrones, we would always do an episode at the end of the season to discuss the entire season and give our thoughts and opinions on what was to come. The last time that that Jeff and I did that episode, Game of Thrones finale, was all the way back in season 3 of Game of Thrones. So that was the Red Wedding. That was the penultimate episode of that season. Since then, I mean, the series has concluded to much controversy this year anyway. And back in those days when we used to do those episodes, Jeff was our go-to guy for Game of Thrones knowledge because he had read the books. He had been a fan of Game of Thrones basically since the first book came out. If I remember the story correctly, your brother bought you, A Game of Thrones, the first book, when it was initially released for a birthday present, right?
You have an amazing memory. That is absolutely correct. I have a first printing of Game of Thrones.
Nice. Yeah, because, and also, if I remember correctly, he bought it for you because there was a picture of a wolf on the cover.
He was a sweet kid of, like, I think he probably was, like, one of the first gifts he bought me, because he couldn't have been more than 8 years old at the time. Like, the, we were just finding him 8 or 9 years old, which is the same age my son is right now.
Yeah.
And it was one of the first gifts he bought his older brother, and he bought it just because there was a guy with a sword and a wolf in the front, and he thought it looked cool.
That's awesome.
Sounds pretty cool.
All right. So, you know, since, you know, all this has happened, what are your thoughts on the series as a whole, and especially these last couple seasons where there's the controversy that I spoke of? What's your opinion on the series?
I was fine with it. So,
okay.
I actually, like, I'm not gonna lie, yes, the season 6 and season 5, season 7 and 8 were the last two, I'm trying to remember the numbers here.
Yeah.
They were probably the best. You had some really solid writing, you had some really good points. I felt my only complaint of the last two seasons was they were rushed.
Yes.
They finished the story the way they did, and I'm not going to say, oh, they should have done this, they should have done that. Man, they had their story to tell, and they told, I thought it was fine. I feel, you know, they could have, probably, you know, based off of previous history, they could have pulled that material out over another season.
Yes.
And I don't, you know, no one really knows, as much speculation there is that they wanted to finish up, or that HBO said they wanted to finish it. I've heard, you know, things where HBO said, oh no, you can keep going for 8 more seasons, and that Benioff and Weiss wanted just, oh, they wanted to finish it the season. No one really knows, and frankly, because of the internet, no one will ever know, because there's so much hatred out there for them, and they're never going to show their face. They don't have to. They've made their show, they told their story, and they moved on, and all the more power to them. I don't hate them for it. The last two seasons were fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say, oh no, they were garbage and care. Yeah, there was some quite large character movements that probably could have been explained better if they had taken more time. But overall, I'm happy with the show. I'm not going to let two seasons of not as good writing ruin what were 6 amazing seasons, mm-hmm. and 2 what I would say were average TV series. Like, let's be honest, the last two seasons were average TV quality. It's just the fact that they, you know, didn't, you're going up against this juggernaut of 6 seasons that, and unfortunately, you can't always make hits, and I'm fine with the way it ended. My wife, who I actually got into it somewhere around, I think, season 5, I ended up watching the whole show. She's not a big sci-fi or fantasy fan. She doesn't watch these shows. I actually got her into Game of Thrones, and we ended up watching it together. New ones came out, and all the way to the end. And I enjoyed that. And I enjoyed watching 8 years of a show conclude. Mm-hmm. I liked that it just didn't drop off, and they actually got to close off the storyline, regardless of how they closed it off. I think, you know, they're kind of, it's, you could have gone any ways, and I'm not going to be upset about them choosing to do the storyline in a certain way, because that's their prerogative as a story writer. They don't have to make it happy. They don't have to ever give in to fan demands. It's their choice and how they want to do it. It was rushed, and that's my only criticism about it. I wish they had maybe taken some more time, but I'm happy that we had it, and I'm not going to let, you know, people's opinion in the last two seasons spoil the show for me. I enjoyed the show immensely, and I'm happy that it came on TV, and I think it's forever changed the TV landscape, and for the better.
Yeah, exactly. No, I completely agree with you. Like, that is my complaint too, that they did rush, a couple of the last couple seasons. But the thing of it is, I apologize, I have a cold, so hopefully I don't fade out here. When George R.R. Martin first wrote these books, he famously said this fantasy series is unfilmable. So the fact that they did what they did is an amazing achievement, I think, that, you know, they were able to accomplish what they accomplished. And, you know, did everything get resolved the way I would have liked? No, but like, as you said, Jeff, the showrunners, this was their baby. Like, this was their project to do with as they wanted, and this is how they went. And to be honest with you, because everyone thought, John and Danny get married, and you live happily ever after, blah, blah, blah. To me, that would have been boring. To me...
And when has that ever happened on that show?
Well, yeah, happily ever after does not happen in this universe that George R. R. Martin's created. That being said, the choices they made to me were unpredictable. Like, I honestly, like, some of the ways they went, I did not see coming. And I like that as a viewer. Like, I don't want to watch something that's predictable. I don't want, to know the beats of the season before I even see it. I like the fact, they did what they did. And also, getting to back to the unfilmable part of George R. R. Martin, and I know there's been reports that HBO said, money's don't be limited by your budget, do what you want, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's entirely true. With any business, there is a limit to what you can spend, and to do an epic like this, there were limits, and not just financial limits, but there's human limits. There's, you got so many different actors that have other obligations, and trying to get that all worked out, trying to get, filming locations worked out, to get, the people that make the show, get them all going. There's a lot of, it's a lot of juggling involved in making a TV series, and especially something like this, where it's not filmed on a soundstage. It's filmed on location. It's, there's so many factors at play here that I think that did affect the series. And it would affect any series. Like, George R. R. Martin, he's not hampered down by actors or weather or governments, like when they got to go film in Spain or in Ireland or in Canada. He doesn't have to worry about getting visas or the legalities of getting actors across borders and all that kind of stuff. When he's writing his books, he can do whatever he wants as a writer, as a novelist. Your imagination is limitless. You can do whatever you want. Unfortunately, when you make a TV show, you don't have that. Like, you are hampered down by so many factors. And the fact that they pulled off what they did, to me, is an amazing achievement. That being said, Jeff, are you looking forward to the next book? And
absolutely.
Do you think it's going to come out anytime
soon? More?
Oh, yeah.
He's never finished the series. He's still got, like, two books left.
Yeah, two more. Yeah,
seriously? But why would they end the show without ending the... Like, what?
Well,
that was the thing, somewhere around season four, you were able to kind of look and go, this show is going to surpass the books.
I remember they were going to go faster than the books.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially since book 4 and 5 essentially split the storyline half. I'm trying to remember.
That's so correct. It's Game of Thrones Kelvin universe?
Well, no, so they had George. I think the leading rumor is that George R. Martin was still creating input into the show.
Yep.
So
yep.
He gave them kind of the beats where I think the books were going, at least at that time. And obviously, there are certain things in the show that had already deviated from the books. They're fairly true. I think there was more omissions, less deviations than from the books. But again, like you said, Chris, the show, books are unfilmable, especially since they haven't even been written. So, yeah, you can't. It's just I will. I'm still looking forward to the books. I will still read the next books. I mean, I've read at least the first three books multiple times. I've listened to the first five on Audible, which are a great way, by the way, to go through the books. They're easy to digest, and especially one of the guys reading it, he does voices. So,
Roy Dotrice.
Yes. He's great, and especially with the amount of characters in there, the voices help immensely.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like when we talked like years ago when we did this, you had mentioned that to listen to the audiobooks, and I have listened to the first two audiobooks. And I mean, it takes a while. I think they're 40-hour audiobooks.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, like he does such an awesome job with the different voices. Yeah, it's a fantastic way to digest the books.
Yeah.
But and I'm almost kind of happy that the books weren't done, because now that the series is over, you know, we got something else to look forward to. Like, because like you said, there are two books, Winds of Winter and A Dream for Spring, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah, so you know, I'm excited. I just, you know, fingers crossed. He is getting older. You know, he's not in the best shape. I'm hoping he gets these done before, you know, the Grim Reaper gets them.
There's precedent for this. I was a big fan of Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time series. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Robert Jordan, he passed before he could complete the series. His wife and son ended up getting Brandon Sanderson in, and Brandon Sanderson finished the story, and it could have been penned by Jordan himself. Same, you know, same style he used.
Yeah.
It felt like Jordan writing the books, and you couldn't tell the difference to the fact that they actually ended. And I mean, as much as I would love Martin to finish them, I think, unfortunately, I think he's too big. Have someone else finish his work for him. But I think it could be done. Especially if proper notes were left. But yes, I would like to see the series finish before unfortunately he passes.
Yes.
I wonder, like, will he finish the story? Like, will he take beats from the show and incorporate them into the books now? Because there are many things the show did differently in the way mm-hmm. that the show went that he could go. So I wonder how much. And again, this is a question we'll never know. I wonder how much influence the show will have on the books.
That's interesting.
Yeah. The only thing is, like, I did, I can't remember if it was a YouTube interview I saw of George R. R. Martin, or if this was something I read, where he basically said that no one will continue his books. That's something that, you know, because someone asked him that, you know, would you let another fantasy author come in and write another book series based on these characters, based in this universe? And he said no. He said, like, Tolkien.
Well, yeah, once he's dead, it's not really his choice.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if he'd have something set up or if his wife would be open, because I think he's married. If his wife would be open to allowing it, but
the IP would fall to his estate. And at that point, it would be up to the estate. That's why Jordan's wife and son were able to continue it. Because Jordan wanted the series to finish.
Yeah.
So they were able to find someone to finish it for him.
Well,
so what you're saying is Disney's going to buy it when he dies. That's what you say.
Well, one day Disney's going to own all of us in some way. But you never know. George R. R. Martin might change his attitude on that. He might change his mind when, because I mean, the thing of it is, he's living it up right now. Like he's enjoying this, you know, this fame and everything that's going along with it. Like he's more popular than he's ever been in his life, and I don't blame the guy for taking the time and going on this ride, because he spent years, you know, just sitting at home writing his books, because he did television work as well, you know, writing his screenplays and stuff. Now he's, you know, world famous. He's a name that, you know, people go to see now. So I absolutely don't blame him for enjoying it.
I don't also want to be in his shoes, because think about it. He's got the legacy he has to live up to now.
Mm-hmm.
is incredible. He has to live up to not only his own legacy of this series and making sure the books continue to be at the level they were, but he's kind of got this whole, well, you definitely need to be better than the show to finish this off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of pressure. I can see why he's taking the time. But really, as someone who's been kind of reading, I don't want to sound pretentious, but reading this since early days, yes, he's taken a long time to release Winds of Winter, but I'm not surprised. Like,
mm-hmm.
as being a fan of Robert Jordan and George R. R. Martin, and now I'm getting into Stephen King's Dark Tower finally,
mm-hmm.
understanding how long it takes these authors to finish these epics,
mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised it's taken him this long.
Yeah, well... It is crazy though. Like you take, like you're speaking of the Dark Tower, like Stephen King, how many books that guy pushes out? I actually saw they had like a joint interview, George R. R. Martin and Stephen King, and that was one of the things George R. R. Martin asked Stephen King. He's like, "How can you write so fast?" And check it out on YouTube. I think it's like a writers' convention or something, where they were like the main speakers.
The keynote
speakers, yeah. Two great writers. It was awesome seeing them on stage together. All right, well, let's move on to talking about some picks and pans. Jeff, we'll start with you. Do you have any picks and pans you wish to share with the listeners?
I got one that will probably fit into both. Warhammer is kind of in it. I still do play video games. And Borderlands 3 was released upon this recording about a month ago.
Okay.
The Borderlands series, it's one of the, it probably started, or at least was one of the founding members of the, what they call a looter shooter genre, which is where it's a first person shooter, but, you know, rather than having one gun or one of five guns, it has an RPG element to it, where you're constantly getting new loot, new weapons, and you're upgrading your character. And I have a fondness for this. I played through Borderlands 1 multiple times. I played through Borderlands 2 and all the DLC multiple times. My wife and I actually sat through and played down through Borderlands 1, Borderlands 2, and Borderlands 3 sequel. And then we went and played through Borderlands 2 again. And funny enough, before Borderlands 3 was announced, we were actually playing through Borderlands 2. And Borderlands 3 got announced, and then they actually gave free DLC to Borderlands 2 to actually progress the storyline from Borderlands 2 to Borderlands 3, which just so happened that we were already playing through, and I thought it was amazing that happened. And now we're playing Borderlands 3, and it's you know, Borderlands 2 came out in, I want to say, 2015, and then Borderlands 3 came out 4 years later in 2019, and it's the same old Borderlands. You know, it's got that same humor. You're still running around, you know, shooting stuff, and it's something that my wife and I can pick up and play for an hour and a half, 2 hours, you know, a couple nights a week, and just it's a way of spending time together that we both enjoy. My pan is also Borderlands 3, and a couple things, like the game is notoriously glitchy. People complain about this since launch.
Are you playing it on?
Xbox One.
Okay, perfect. Sorry.
No. That's a fair question. I've heard this actually is cross platforms: Xbox One, PlayStation, and PC. It's all the same. It takes me most of the time two times to launch it. Like, I'll launch it and the game crashes and fails to launch. If I open up we're playing two players. If I open up a menu and start scrolling through my different guns to pick, my wife's experience, like on the same console, she'll start lagging a little bit and jumping around. And that's what I find that I've heard is common. And then there's just small things like, in previous editions, the side is this, you know, and not, I know what not everyone, most people don't play couch co-op now. They play online with people, but my wife and I play couch co-op. The split screen used to be, you could do a vertical split screen, so a left and a right, or you could do top and bottom. We preferred left and right just from the way it oriented the screen. Mm-hmm. They took that option away. Not available in Borderlands 3. They've also bumped the resolution up, which again gives you great detail, but it makes all the writing on the screen really tiny. So it's even on our 46-inch TV that we're sitting 6 feet from, it's really hard. Like, maybe I'm getting older, but it's actually quite hard to see the mission objective underneath the minimap. And the other thing is, only player one has the mission objective under the minimap. Player two still has a minimap and a little diamond saying this is where you need to go, but no mission objective. So half the time my wife is like, what are we doing? What's going on? And the subtitles, because she likes to read the subtitles on, only display on player one screen. So like if it's, you know, it's the horizontal split, the subtitles are on my screen, but not on her screen. I put the subtitles on for her. I don't care about the subtitles, but if someone's talking and I open up a menu, you can't see the subtitles anymore. So it's like, it's small little gameplay things that are just really annoying. And unfortunately, it's kind of detracting from her experience, because my wife is telling me, she's like, she goes, I have no idea what's going on in the storyline. She goes, most of the time, I'm just running around to an objective, killing the guy, and then we move on to the next one. Because she can't see what the objectives are. She, you know, she's not going to be looking at my screen. She's going to be looking at her screen. She can't, you know, the people are talking and she's not really catching what they're saying because the subtitles are on my screen. It's a little bit annoying. So I'm going to have to switch it up to where she's the first player, which bothers me a little bit, but that's a control thing. And then I play second player. But it's small little gameplay things like the user experience like that is a pain for me. And unfortunately, it's kind of detracting from our play experience a little bit.
Hey man, at least you can get your wife to play a shooter game with you. And anything but Mario, I tell you, is out of the just not happening.
Right on. So, Rich, do you have a pick or pan?
I've got a couple of quick ones. I figured I'd spread my love a little bit here. I got a TV show, a documentary, and a movie that. Kind of, I'm all a little bit high on for picks. I don't really have many pans because I don't really, I'm very stringent with my media watching, and I try to only watch things that are good, YouTube things excluded. For the TV show, I have to say, maybe it's my age, I don't know. But I have gotten into like mystery TV shows, specifically Murdoch Mysteries. I have been all over that. I'm just starting season 12, and there are 13 seasons. Like, they're just airing the 13th season now, I believe. And okay. I started watching it about a month ago. So I've watched 11 and a bit seasons in like 5-ish weeks. So I'm just a bit obsessed with it. I also actually got to go to a live filming event where they were filming in Kingston, Ontario, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump up the highway for me. So I got up at 5:30 in the morning one day and trekked my way all the way out to Kingston and got to watch the filming for a couple hours and, you know, got to wave hi to the stars. They were probably like at one point, I don't know, like 6-7 feet from me sort of thing. So, you know, didn't get to talk to them or anything, but got to make eye contact and say hi sort of thing. So that was kind of cool, and take some pictures and be able to see, as someone who loves production and the idea of production and knowing how things are made and put together, I loved being able to go there and see what's outside of the frame and to see how they put everything together, to see all the extras getting off of a school bus all in costume and, you know, standing a block away all having their cigarette breaks and vaping and stuff. Like, it's hilarious. And then, like, in between scenes, you can see the people, like all the extras who are dressed up, you know, like 1900s or whatever, and they're all pulling out their iPhones and checking their Twitter and their Instagram in between shots. It was really funny. But yeah, Murdoch Mysteries, I absolutely love it. I guess now that I'm into mysteries and old, I'm going to have to go back and see if I like Murder, She Wrote. Because I remember my mom really loving that when I was younger, and I guess it's kind of like an old people thing, so I'm going to have to see if I like that now to see if I truly am old.
I liked it when it aired. I thought it was great. But yeah, I did watch it with my grandma, though. But
yeah, well, exactly. See what I mean? So for the movie, my wife and I just sat down the other night and had a little bit of a movie night, and we watched two movies. We watched Stuber, which was absolutely hilarious, really fun, dumb movie. But more interesting was Little Monsters. And no, I'm not talking about the 1989 classic with Howie Mandel. No, I'm talking about a new film that's kind of a zombie parody in a way. I don't want to give too much away, but if you go and watch the trailer, it's basically, a dirtbag guy who just drags his whole life down and everybody in his life down, is babysitting his sister's son on a field trip with a teacher. There's about 10 kids, and all of a sudden a zombie outbreak happens and they have to take care of the kids, and they just so happen to be at a family mini putt-putt course, and there's an appearance by a child TV star. That's why they went. The child TV star is played by Josh Gad, who I love. He's hilarious in everything that he does. And it really, really kind of, there's a lot of moments where it kind of shows you what seeing the possibility of death can really do to someone. Because, you know, 1 minute before the zombies come, this guy is, oh, happy-go-lucky, I love all the little kiddies, you know, I love the kids, they're great. And then as soon as the zombies come, he's locked himself inside, you know, the only house and saying, fuck you, like, I don't care if there's kids out there. You know, the only reason I liked my job is because I got to fuck all their mothers. It's quite hilarious. Definitely worth a watch. It's Little Monsters. Look it up. The trailer is on YouTube, and it just came out on digital, I believe. So that's really good. And the final one that I would like to give a pitch for is a new documentary that came out. Not going to get into it because I know it would be a little controversial probably. But it's just really, really interesting. It's called The Game Changers. It's a documentary brought out by James Cameron, executive produced by Arnold Schwarzenegger, as well as like a whole bunch of other people. But it's basically the advent of plant-based diets in sports and in different areas of sports in life in general. But, you know, like they talk to a lot of sports stars, strongmen, Olympic champions. They do a bit with some firefighters in New York City, so on and so forth. Lots of really great information, stuff that I wouldn't have even guessed that you could measure or why they would measure. Like, they've got a part where they're taking measurements on football and baseball players' penis hardness on a plant-based diet versus a meat-based diet. So really interesting, weird stuff. Obviously, it's going to be a little biased towards a plant-based diet, yeah, of course. So you have to take everything with a grain of salt because, I mean, yeah, like, as someone who doesn't eat meat, although I'm not a vegan, I don't eat meat, but I tend to think that, you know, everything can be bad for you if moderation is not brought into it, right? Yeah. So, I mean, if you're just eating a pure vegan diet and you're not doing it properly, you're going to get sick. If you're just eating meat and you're not getting enough of other things, you're going to get sick. So it doesn't matter what you're eating. Who cares? But it's just a really good documentary. Lots of really cool information and goes in some directions you wouldn't expect. So, and that is now available on Netflix, at least in Canada. And as I said, it's a James Cameron documentary. So super interesting. Yeah.
So I'm going to stop you there because I absolutely have a bone to pick about this documentary.
See, I knew. I was like, I don't want to get too into it. Is this controversial?
I actually did one.
I thought it was going to be Chris.
My wife and I watched part of it, and background was...
I didn't catch all of that, but I have an idea of what you were saying. You were kind of going in and out.
They pick and choose their pieces from.
Oh yeah, exactly right, and it's just
own narrative.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like they did have a very good opportunity to talk about how it actually affects pure athletes, whereas they went off on a little bit of a tangent, and like you said, they picked and chose their own issues or their own parts to show of different tests and whatnot, and a lot of documentaries do that for sure. So that is unfortunate. However, I mean, like I said, you have to take everything with a grain of salt when it comes to documentaries. They're all biased. All documentaries are biased. That's what the You know, they're all going to be going for one specific thing. This just happens to be going towards, obviously, plant-based diets. But I mean, like, you have to draw your own conclusions. I'm pretty sure Jeff said that. I'm not sure if anybody else could hear. But, you know, you have to take everything that you see and hear on something like this. And if you find it interesting, go out and research it yourself. Find the studies that they're talking about and make sure that you understand exactly what's going on, because they are going to only show you what they want you to know, what they want you to hear. I mean, that's what everything these days is about. I mean, ever since you go back to tobacco, big tobacco in the 50s, you know, they knew that their products were causing cancer and they didn't tell anybody, and they spent a lot of time suppressing it. And, you know, like the news nowadays, they know what's going on, but do they show us, you know, what's actually happening? No, they want to tell us what'll get us riled up or what'll get us talking or what'll get them views. So it you have to go out and definitely do your own research, you know, and health is different for each person. You know, some people can't eat a plant-based diet because of their own bodily needs. Some people can't eat meat because of certain enzymes. So, I mean, it's all different for everybody, and you have to definitely do your own research for sure. But it's an interesting documentary, I would say.
I just thought it was funny that you thought it would be controversial for me that you would think. No, I saw the trailer for this. I think it's quite interesting. I know sometimes, Rich, I throw a little jab at you for being vegan, but
I'm not vegan.
but you know what I mean. Like you go to the vegan restaurants
for
and
sure.
stuff.
I project that.
But I mean to be like it doesn't matter to me like what people, you know. It's just I hate, for me personally, I don't like it when people, you know, start nitpicking at both your food choices, right? Like, you know, just eat what you like,
eat what's good for you and good for your surrounding environment and local businesses.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, well, I have I'm gonna rifle through these as quick as I can. I got three movies and two TV shows that I wanted to but you know, if you guys want to add anything to them, feel free to jump in. I'll be as quick as I can here. So I'll start with the movies. First up, El Camino. It's a Breaking Bad movie. It's the story of what happens to Jesse Pinkman after the series finale and what happened to him prior to the series finale of Breaking Bad. And this was excellent. I absolutely love this. I'm a Breaking Bad fan. I thought this movie was great. I loved all the cameos involved. There's a lot of cameos. So if you're a Breaking Bad fan, I think you will like this movie. It was fantastic. It hit all the right beats. It was written and directed by the creator of Breaking Bad, Vince Gilligan. Yeah, it's fantastic, and it's on Netflix. Another one on Netflix is Between Two Ferns. You liked it, Jeff?
I did. I thought it was absolutely.
Okay, see, for me, I would give it a pan, to be honest with you.
Ooh.
You know, like, I loved all the celebrity cameos. I loved some of the jokes that they made. I really did, but I found I want to say most of this movie was improv. Like, they just kind of said, okay, we're doing this, and they just kind of improvised it at the time. And I really felt that was really evident in some of the Will Ferrell, Zach Galifianakis scenes, where, like, they were doing things that I didn't particularly find funny. Like, it kind of fell flat for me.
I won't argue with you.
I mean, I did love the celebrity cameos. I loved the jabs that they made. But honestly, some of the best jabs were in the trailer. I don't know. Like, it wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen, but I know, like, I was starting to watch it with my wife, and she got bored real fast. Like, she really didn't find the humor.
Did you watch the outtakes at the end? Because those were
Yes, I did. Yeah, there was definitely some good outtakes. I did watch that. I thought that was hilarious. And I did, like, I did see some interviews with the writer and director of the film, where I think there was actually one celebrity that actually did get upset. He didn't say who it was, but I'm kind of interested to find out who that was. Because, yeah, Galifianakis, like I said, I'm thinking most of this movie was improv, so some of the things he says to some of the celebrities, I think would, you know, it's almost like one of them, Comedy Central roasts, right? Like, where it really goes for it. But for me, like, I wouldn't say it's a total pan. For me, it's more of a meh. It's kind of between a pick and a pan. I think if you're a Galifianakis fan, you'll like it. But for me, it kind of fell flat in some spots. I should say these three films are all Netflix films. The last one I wanted to talk about for the films is In the Tall Grass. It's like a,
I thought that was a TV show. No, like, I thought it was a series on Netflix.
No, it's just a movie.
It is a movie?
Yeah, it's just a movie. Yeah, it's based on a novella by Stephen King and his son Joe Hill. Yeah, I really liked it. It's a 2-hour movie, and it was great. Like, it was interesting. Spoilers. I'm not gonna get into too many details, but you know, these people hear a kid crying, you know, they stop on the side of a road, they're by a big field of grass, and they hear a kid calling for help, they go into the grass, and they can't get out. And it's a good movie. I really enjoyed it. At the end, it might be, like, honestly, I had to Google the ending, and I actually watched some YouTube videos about the ending, because I wouldn't say I was confused, but I just wanted to make sure that what I thought happened. But yeah, definitely it's a pick for me. Like, I really enjoyed it. And then the two TV shows, the one is on Netflix. It just came out about a week ago, and that's the Paul Rudd series, Living With Yourself. Now, I thought this was a movie. I didn't realize this was a series. It's an 8-episode Netflix series, which runs about a half an hour per episode. And yeah, it's basically Paul Rudd playing, you know, a Paul Rudd type of character, who accidentally, but not accidentally, gets cloned. So now you're dealing with two Paul Rudds on this show. And, you know, I love the narrative choices that they've made. You know, there's something will happen in, say, episode two, and then episode three, you'll see that same thing happening, but from a different perspective. And you'll see, you know, what happens because of it. Like, it's really neat how they, you know, how they move with the narrative on this series. And, you know, I'm not giving too much away, but the last episode leaves it open to more seasons to come. But yeah, if you like Paul Rudd, I love Paul Rudd. I think he's you know, he's hilarious. I love every movie he's been in. If you like Ant-Man, you'll like this show Living With Yourself, and it's on Netflix. And the last TV show I wanted to talk about was season two of The Terror, and that was on AMC. The first season of The Terror, I didn't even realize there was going to be a season two until it was on my PVR. Season one of The Terror was about the HMS Terror, which was a ship from England, and it had there was another ship with it. I can't remember the name of that ship, but basically they sailed from Britain in the early 1900s, or sorry, the 19th century, to North America to sail through the north to try to find the Northwest Passage to India, and they ended up getting marooned and stuck in ice, and they ended up being stuck there for 2 years, and then they ended up all dying, right? And and actually I think like deep sea divers or deep sea explorers and stuff have just started going down to the Terror, like as of this year. It's still like it's sunk, but it's still in, you know, up in the Northwest Territories, in amongst the ice. But season two, sorry, Jeff, what was that? I couldn't quite hear you.
I said, wasn't that the plot in the first Michael Bay film?
The plot in wasn't that the plot in the Michael Bay?
The Michael Bay Transformers movie where they found Megatron.
Oh, okay. No, but this is actually real. Like, these ships actually did get...
So we're Transformers, Chris? What the hell?
Well, maybe. I'm not sure. But anyway, that was season one of The Terror. Season two is a completely different story. It takes place just prior to World War II, and takes place during World War II. And it's about this Japanese family that is being terrorized by this ancient demon. And this show, like season two of The Terror, one of the reasons why I decided to stick with it is because George Takei's in it, who played Mr. Sulu on the original Star Trek. This season two of The Terror is really two different shows that they kind of combined into one. On the one show, it's like a historical drama that shows, you know, the Japanese internment camps during World War II in the United States and Canada, like what the Japanese people went through, you know, when they were basically rounded up and put into these camps because, you know, of what happened at Pearl Harbor. But then they're also doing this horror story where this demon or whatever you want to call her is killing people and terrorizing this one family that is put into this internment camp. Honestly, it's like, you know, if they had an internment camp movie, you know, like let's say like Schindler's List, you know, instead of it being about the Holocaust, you know, concentration camps, it was about an internment camp. And then it's like adding The Ring to that concept. You know, this show was very different. I honestly don't even know if I should make it a pick or a pan. You know, like, it had some really solid acting in it. It had some interesting things, like seeing the internment camps, seeing, you know, what, you know, the Japanese Americans and Japanese Canadians, because there was internment camps in Canada as well, went through. But at the same time, you had this horror show thing going on, and it really got very convoluted towards the end of the season, because, yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but it got very confusing. So I'm putting it as a meh as well, because it's, you know, like I said, the acting and stuff is solid, but, you know, it's a show that really didn't know what it was trying to be. I wish they would have just done a historical drama showing the internment camps and showing, you know, what it was like, but it's almost like AMC said, no, you can't do that. You gotta make it a horror show. And then they were like, okay, I guess we'll, you know, make it a horror show.
You know
too.
What this show needs? Zombies. That's what plays well on AMC. Zombies.
Honestly, a good comparison.
Can we make Ocean Zombies?
Would be like if they took Homeland and like the new season of Homeland was about zombies. It's that kind. It's jarring. It's like, what is going on here? But at the same time, like I said, the acting's good, and it I've never been so conflicted on a show. But yeah, that was season two of The Terror. So anyway, I know it's getting late for you guys, so why don't we wrap this up and play that game once again of where can we find you on the internet? Rich, where can we find you, sir?
Well, if my connection doesn't drop again, you can find me, I guess, every once in a while here. I also tend to guest on my buddy Mike's podcast, The Graveyard Shift. And just kind of every once in a while, as well as, you know, the occasional other podcast here or there. You can find me on Twitter if you really want, at Reesh613. If you talk to me, I'll talk to you. Otherwise, I don't really use it very much because nobody ever talks to me. So what's the point?
All right. And Jeff, where can we find you, sir?
Likewise, I'm not too interested in the animals. You can find me around the Warhammer forums and pages on Facebook. You want to talk podcasts? Usually talking about different tournaments and whatnot.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm losing my voice. I apologize. I've got a really bad cold this week. But anyway, you can follow me, Chris Lockhart, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at ChrisLock1701. And I have a blog. It's www.randomnerdness.blogspot.com. All right. Well, Jeff and Rich, I want to thank you guys again for coming on tonight. It was great having this Geek Fallout reunion.
My pleasure.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. We should do it again someday. Hopefully not in 5+ years.
Well, and hopefully Skype will cooperate next time. But, all right, well, on behalf of myself and Rich and Jeff, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast and to listening to our Geek Fallout reunion. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.
Should have ended off with the Welcome to the Wasteland.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.